Quiet noises, loud noises, annoying noises, sweet noises, these are things that we don't want. They're done, they're cancelled, so welcome to The Right Podcast for that, your weekly and hopefully entertaining look at the week's tech news with a not-so-new noise-cancelling podcast. But before that, let's meet the team. Before that, let's apologise for some annoying noises from Cherie.
Yeah, I'm Cherie Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag, and I've been forced to relocate where I record because I was trying to escape a smoke detector that won't stop beeping and they won't send the fix. And I went downstairs and now you're going to get treated to the sounds of the New York City subway as well as the annoying beep. So forgive me.
I'm James Peckham, phones editor for TechRadar, and so far, I'm absolutely silent.
I'm Bill Thomas, US computing editor of TechRadar, and I am pretty quiet, too.
I'm Gareth Beavis, global editor-in-chief of TechRadar, and while it is fairly quiet here, there is a five-year-old outside the bedroom door who's trying to FaceTime her grandmother and just loves to shout and sing at her once in a while, so that may come through. You can all wait for that to pop up. But anyway, lovely to have you here, Bill. Thanks for joining us. This is very exciting.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting, isn't it?
You guys are so lucky. Well, I feel that way. Tell us a quick bit about yourself, because our listeners haven't heard anything about you. What makes you so special?
Oh, wow. What doesn't make me special? I don't know. Like, I do computer stuff, and I don't have a personality.
So subversive by saying that. It means you have. It's so clever.
Yeah. It's like, when I get that question, it's like, I forget everything about myself.
I once forgot my name under the question, what's your name? I was trying to write it down on a sheet once when I was at work, you know, like you log in and someone was talking to me. I was like, write your name down. And I couldn't remember it for like 3 seconds. And you start to like spiral with the fact of like, I can't remember my own name. What are you talking about? You can't remember. And of course you can. Like, oh, it's Gareth. Yeah. But it was like in that moment where I forgot it was like, you know, waking up and you can't move, like sleep paralysis. It was horrible. Anyway, onto actual tech things. Coming smashing into the running order at the last minute is, well, last night, recording this on Wednesday, last night's announcement that the PS5 controller is now being unveiled. I mean, Sony is leaking this thing slowly, isn't it? It is drawing out every single bit, but it worked. I mean, the internet went crazy for this, didn't it? Bill, you were there right there at the start when it happened. What was your take on the news?
Well, it came out of nowhere. Like, I think we were all just like kind of winding down for the day, and then suddenly there's this blog post and everything just gets turned up to 11. And then I see the controller and I hate it.
Oh, more on that later.
Yeah. Bill, tell us about what was actually shown off, though. Like, was it just the picture?
So, it was a picture along with a blog post where they talked about, like, new parts of the controller that they put in. Like, there's, like, haptic motors in the triggers to make it, you know, easier for people to, like, gradually, like, put pressure on in, like, driving games. Or there's a USB-C charger, which is probably the coolest thing in the world. And then there's like they changed the PS button to where it's like, it blends into the background of the controller. So like, nobody's going to be able to find it in the dark.
I mean, from what I gather, it's obviously called DualSense rather than DualShock now, which makes me feel like, and the idea about the haptics was supposed to be that making it so it feels like it's just more of a sensory experience in your hands, which, you know, it's marketing speak to the next level, but it seems to make more sense. It's going to do more things and touch more of your senses, right?
Right, and I don't really understand quite how big of a deal it's actually going to be, because like the PS4 controller already has vibration in it, and it also has the touchpad that is being made a big deal. I guess it just looks bigger.
It looks more like a Xbox controller, which most gamers prefer, PC and console gamers, so that's a big thing. With the haptics, they're saying that the haptics are going to be a lot more precise than what we've gotten in the past. So if you are driving through mud, you're supposed to feel that slow, gritty pull of like driving through mud and things of that nature. They also swapped out the share button for something called create.
Which is like the same thing.
Probably. They haven't said what the difference between share and create is, so who knows? But I do like the color scheme. It looks very futuristic. It's very spaceship-like, and I'm all for that. And yes, right now it's polarizing. It's a polarizing look, but I think that once it releases and they start showing off new color schemes, people will be fine with it.
Well, I like going back to the haptic thing real quick. Do you think it's going to be like on the level of like the HD Rumble found in the Nintendo Switch's Joy-Cons?
Ooh.
Just on that, I'm gonna jump in. And I was playing. I was trying to play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 because I'm old. It's one of the greatest games of all time, and it was trying to play it on a browser, and it was emulating an N64 game, and it was saying like, "Please insert your Rumble Pack," and I was like, "Ah, the Nintendo N64 Rumble Packs." That's where it began. That's where pointless rumbling in your fingers turned up. Sorry, just happened to me last night. Carry on.
I'm not sure. I think like it. I'm hoping that they'll go beyond that, because that's a bold claim to say, oh, well, you're going to be able to feel different gradients of things. I mean, isn't that the dream that they've been chasing since the Rumble Pack? I don't, like, we'll see if they get there. We're just going to have to wait and see.
Three pings so far from Shuri, I'm counting. Please let me know if you can anymore. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, this is a good tease from Sony. It's another chance for them to push, you know, the hype around the PS5 for a little bit longer. So let's see how long that lasts for. But Sony's not just making PlayStations, it's also unveiling other things, such as the new noise-cancelling headphones, at the same time as Samsung are trying to do the same thing, but not bringing the same things to the rest of the world. Cherie, can you unpick this for us somehow? Because if there's too many headphones.
All right, so... if you listen to a couple of the first noise canceling episodes, and I know you did, we talked about why Sony isn't as popular as, say, Apple or Samsung or any of the other big hitters out there. So they are releasing two new headphones, and the names are just as unwieldy and confusing as ever. So you've got the True Wireless WF-XB700
and well remembered.
And the over-ear WH-CH710N. Yeah, I almost lost that one. So let's start with the WH. They are basically supposed to be a less expensive version of the popular WM-1000XM3s that recently came out, Sony's top tier over ear headphones. They're going to be about $150 cheaper, which, yay, saving money is always great. They'll have adaptive noise cancellation, which is pretty good for the price. And, for the over ears, those are going to be a cheaper version of the, WF-1000XM3, Sony needs to work on the names.
Let's try to help this out for people. Really, so this, good. I can't even bother. The good true wireless headphones, the 1000XMBs or whatever they are, they're the ones that have been quite a good standard recently. They are being replaced or upgraded, right? Or are they lower down?
They're not being replaced. These are a tier below. So if you don't have the $399 to fork out for the top of the line, save $150 and get comparable sound quality and noise canceling.
Okay.
Basically.
What's the catch then?
They're probably going to be, they're not going to be as good as the top of the line. Like you get what you pay for, basically.
Okay. And obviously the Sony the Sony 1000XM. The good over ear ones, they haven't been replaced. I know a lot of people and our readers are really excited about that. And, you know, the idea that these kind of really lovely over ear headphones are going to be updated. Sony hasn't done that either. It's gone one tier below for that, right?
Yes. Like, I don't think we're going to see a refresh of the top tier ones until maybe up towards the holidays. I think it's a little too soon to go for that mega cash grab that they would go for with the big flashy look and bells and more whistles and this and that. So right now, this is a mid-tier alternative if you want a pair of good Sony headphones and don't want to fork out loads of cash.
So I'm really confused and I'm really lost, and I'm sorry for readers. People aren't even readers. That's how bad it is. The listeners. So the Sony true wireless headphones don't have noise cancelling. That's right. It's only the really expensive ones that do.
Yes. They will be sweat resistant, so you can take them to the gym.
I already hate them because of Sony now. It's made my brain melt. But then equally, I'm annoyed at Samsung because they've, well, under their brand AKG, they've launched headphones that arguably look like they could beat the AirPods Pro, and yet they seem to be stuck in South Korea. I don't understand why you would do that. Well, it's not true. I do, because Samsung does this where it launches cool things in South Korea, then it's, I might just leave it here for now. Like the Samsung Galaxy Beam was a phone with a projector inside it, and the Galaxy Round was its first curved phones. And these are phones that never left South Korea. And I was like, well, if you're going to make them, put them worldwide. But those were kind of more conceptual, crazy things that maybe the South Korea Samsung fans would be more interested in. But these AKG, I think N400s, they've got noise cancelling, they've got proper sweat resistance, they seem to be cheaper than the AirPods Pro, and yet they're not being launched worldwide. I mean, what's that about?
We just don't get the nice things, apparently. Samsung and AKG basically teamed up. Actually, now I'm about to say this makes more sense. They probably made a better earbud than the Galaxy Buds, and Samsung wants people to buy the Galaxy Buds. I think they figured out, like, last minute, like, oh, these are better than what we put out, which is remarkable because the Galaxy Buds, the Galaxy Bud Plus are some really, really good headphones. Again, another episode of noise canceling. Hopefully you tuned in. Despite the lack of noise canceling, they're great headphones. They're excellent. They're excellent ear, truly wireless buds. So imagine all of that goodness that you got from the Galaxy Buds. Now you're throwing noise canceling into it. Yeah, it's going to be a while before we get those.
Very quickly, Bill, I'm going to go to you here. I know that you are a computing guy, but equally, I don't know how much you're using video conferencing beyond the mandated chatting to us every day on Google Hangouts. What do you think about the fact that Skype is allowing people now to sign up or to get meetings without actually having to sign up?
I don't really have any feelings about it because I haven't used Skype since like 2004.
Yeah, but now's the chance because obviously Zoom, everyone's going crazy about Zoom, but a few security problems keep leaking out about the fact that it's not as useful for the wider world as maybe for certain enterprise situations, right? So, I mean, surely it's a good thing that people can video conference a bit better.
Yeah, I am not familiar with the story. Like, are they like letting people like have access to Skype video calling conferencing for free?
Yeah. Yeah, but It's basically you just have to send the link and off you go, really. So the browser, you don't have to have the app installed, you don't have to do anything. So really perfect for people like me who wants to try and talk to my nan and can basically send her an email saying, press this link, that's it, and we can have a chat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I love that then.
You don't even need to have the account though either, Gareth. That's the really interesting thing here, is it neither of you have to have an account. You can just sign in, well, not even sign in, you're just immediately in there. And that's I think Zoom's kind of forced the hand a little bit there. Because that is one of the main features, not one of the main features, but like one of the big features in Zoom that people are loving at the moment. But yeah, it's Zoom's never gone that far. You've always had to have an account to be able to be the one that sets up a call.
I am personally a fan of this. As someone who, like, companies will send a Skype link, it's like, oh, now I have to try to remember what my
Skype.
It's the most annoying thing because, like, I don't Skype regularly. And it's like, oh, well, like, this is how old my Skype account is. It's still a Hotmail account.
So exactly the same. I had to finally go and recover it this weekend to get so I could talk to my nan, who, again, only is using Skype because my aunt decided that she wanted to be cruel and make me have to go through this. And so we did that. Separately, we tried to have a family dinner over a webcam. It did not work to try and eat in front of a webcam. It's just really confusing. Everyone's going, what? What? And then try to have a mouthful of food. Don't do that.
Imagine trying to cook over a webcam. I did that at the weekend and that was just madness. Like, it's just loads of people just clinking plates for like an hour.
Both of those things sound like really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it made it that way a little bit because no one knew who was talking to who. So we decided just to start drinking instead next time. Just makes it much easier to get through the pain of it all.
Much like this podcast.
We have gone on so long about the news section, but the only thing I wanted to talk about quickly was our sister site, Live Science, who do a lovely podcast called Life's Little Mysteries. I urge you to check it out. They wrote a story recently about a secret forest found under the ice in the Antarctic. So 90 million years ago, there was a whole rainforest up there in the Antarctic. Up there, down there. Oh, which one is it? Oh, I've forgotten. The Antarctic, the bottom bit. Yes, it is. the Arctic Circle's at the top. Carry on. Cherie, I think you know what it's time for now. Can you sing us into the labs?
It's time for reviews. Come with us to our labs. Laptops, smartphones, tablets, and everything in between. Reviews.
Bill, can you beat that singing?
No, I can't. I can't even come close.
Every week I'm going to try and get our new guest to try and sing it. One day I'll get someone to try. But thank you for that, Cherie. And we are in the labs, as you can hear. That beeping is now some sort of monitor. doing some kind of experiments in the background. Cherie, there's a couple of your favourite things on the docket this week, and that's Chromebooks, right?
Laptop
Mag Editor loves Chromebooks. Fact.
No, that is not a fact. I am not a fan. It's the first sign of me becoming old. I just am not willing to open my heart to another OS. But the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook is out. We are wrapping up our review, and it is a smoking hot laptop saddled with the unfortunate Chrome OS. And a 4K monitor. Who needs a 4K monitor on a Chromebook? Why?
Isn't it 4K OLED too?
I hope it's not OLED. Oh God, I hope that's just something.
I think it's OLED.
Oh.
So that's why I'm like, what's the battery life on that thing?
It's getting pinged all around the internet for the battery life. Even though OLED theoretically is a power, it doesn't consume as much power as LCD and other panels. 4K just drag. It just kills the battery life. And that's one of the Chromebooks claim to fame is exceedingly long battery life because it doesn't have to do so much. But we are not seeing good numbers right now. I think it barely climbs past the 8-hour mark, if I am correct, for the actual number. Stay tuned for the review going live on laptop today, actually. But beautiful laptop, Fire Engine Red chassis, slim, has all the accoutrements that you would expect from a Chromebook, which isn't much, and it plays nice with Android apps in the Google Play Store.
And how much is it?
It is, I forgot actually.
$999.
It's what?
It's $1,000. Yeah.
No! No, 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 no.
I was about to say, I'm really confused about the fact that Cherie, who likes the glitzy and the glamzy and the things that just look pretty in terms of the tech world, you're talking about how it's Fire Engine Red and it's got a 4K OLED screen and you're annoyed about that. It's that kind of confusing point. I understand that Chromebooks have got a different place in your heart, but I feel like Samsung's being hardly done by for putting really good specs on this.
What it is that it kind of defeats the purpose of a Chromebook. Like, Chromebooks are supposed to be, like, long-lasting and, kind of this utilitarian thing. And, yes, I understand that we have now entered the arena of the premium Chromebook because the kids are graduating from high school and college. And for a lot of them, a Chromebook might be the only OS that they know. So when they go into the work world or what, just decide that they want something a little bit more grown up, that plasticky, indestructible mass that that is the typical Chromebook you see in education environments isn't going to cut it. So now we have to have something a little sleeker, a little more refined. But I'm not sure if I'm willing to pay $1,000 for something where I can't access a fair amount of apps and software and utilities because I'm locked into the Chrome ecosystem.
Fair enough. And what about the Asus Chromebook Flip? Is that the other end of the scale or is that equally igniting your ire?
That is, it's a premium, but not premium priced. Well, not as premium priced. It's around $600. And it does hit all those bells and those marks that I expect a Chromebook to have. It has a longer battery life. It's and speaking of which, what is Chrome OS doing that it needs it needs Core i5, Core i7 processors? What is it doing? What exactly?
So Chrome OS is quite sleek, right? As in, like, not doesn't take too much power.
Yeah, like it's a it's a nice looking Chromebook. But that review is also going to be going live shortly. This ASUS is actually going to be running up against one of our favorite Chromebooks, the Acer C434. Like the number again, a Sony problem. Just we've got to get better naming conventions for these things. They don't roll off the tongue, and it's like, is it ASUS? Is it Acer? Like they all just start to blend together into this amalgamous blob after a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem in most lines of technology. I mean, like, let's not even get into TVs where you just can't do it. Like, I can't even tell you the difference between a TV. And even if it's exactly the same TV, it'll have a whole different name just because it lives in a different country. Listeners, I'm going to call you readers again. The listeners, I'm going to show you behind the curtain a little bit. We do our running order like professional podcasters, as we often do. And this week I've put in AMD Ryzen and the future of gaming laptops. I'll be honest, I've got no idea who or why that's in there. I'm really hoping that one of the people on this podcast will be able to help me.
I put that.
Yes.
I didn't have access to the sheet beforehand.
Yeah. Well, I thought it might have been you, but then realized, yeah, the sheet wasn't shared with you properly. So that, again, height of professionalism here. But we managed to get a great guest in, and we're like, you're going to go in blind, Bill. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So basically, the ASUS Zephyrus G14 got over 11 hours of battery life on our battery test. It's a gaming laptop. This is the first time that a gaming laptop has gotten double digits on our test. This is an unprecedented event. So we basically did a deep dive into how ASUS and how AMD pulled this off, because this is a feat of AMD's new Ryzen 4000 series chips. What we discovered, however, is that when you're actually gaming unplugged and you switch over to the NVIDIA RTX 2060 GPU in the system, we got about an hour and 36 minutes of battery life. Whether we were playing something intensive like Doom Eternal or something a little lighter on power consumption and just demand like Hollow Knight. But when we spoke to AMD, what they basically said is that using a combination of AI and just being smarter about engineering, they've found a way to put checks and balances in so the laptop itself can recognize when more power is being used and when more power, it's not using that much power, and adjust the power consumption accordingly. So while we haven't hit real world times of, because ideally I want something at least 4 hours of battery life for a gaming laptop, just on the strength if I'm commuting, we haven't hit that yet, but we're making positive strides towards the end goal. And the G14 is a great example of where we can go.
Bill, I know that you love the difference between AMD and Intel with a deep passion. Do you agree with Cherie? Or are you like, absolutely not? A gaming laptop shouldn't last more than 2 hours.
Ideally, why would you want shorter battery life?
I was trying to cite debate. That's all it was.
No, but I think another thing that shouldn't be understated is how much more powerful these AMD chips are than what we've seen in the laptop before, too. Sometimes you've seen like full desktop class processors and like these giant hulking laptops like the Alienware Area 51M, where that has like a Core i7 9700. The AMD G14 is able to reach desktop class performance in a laptop that weighs like 2 pounds. I tested it up against like Core i7 9700K in a desktop system with a 360mm liquid cooler. So there were no thermal limitations at all on the desktop chip. And AMD's laptop chip outperformed it by like 15% while consuming about a third of the power.
That's so sexy. Like that is so incredible, because it just speaks to the evolution of laptop, because there's only so much you can do with a laptop design. There's only so many things you can do with the panel. Like, we're moving into 300 hertz refresh. Mm-hmm. Can you really see it? Yes, but I can't explain why it makes a difference, but it makes a difference, especially when you're gaming. But this is something that you can say, hey, here's the numbers, it's more powerful, and this is what you can do with that power.
I just think it's going to be, like, this really awesome tool for, like, not just, like, gamers that are buying these things to play, like, you know, their Doom Eternals, but for video editors that want something that they can, like, carry with them on a plane and get work done. Because this, the processor in this laptop is going to be able to absolutely chew through, like, Premiere workloads.
Back to the battery life, another reason why I'm excited is that MSI actually has a couple of laptops coming out that we saw at CES 2020 that are going to be packing a 99.9 watt hour battery, which is basically the biggest battery that the TSA will allow on an airplane. So this is going to be a gaming laptop with the biggest battery basically ever. So I'm excited to see how that's going to turn out in terms of multitasking and in terms of real life gaming.
Now they just need to pair it with an AMD CPU.
Yes, it would. Ooh, I want that.
The bigger question is how big a TV could you take on a plane? Would you ever, like, you know, right now we're sort of like 8 inches. I'm like, could we ever see a world where we can take a 40-inch TV onto a plane?
No. Space right now.
But TVs are changing, aren't they, Gareth?
But that's so interesting because on the running order, there's a bit about the future of TVs. I was completely unaware.
Oh, is there? Sorry. How weird.
Oh.
So we ran a feature on Tech Radar this week about next-gen TVs, and we ran through six different prototypes of what we think will happen in the next few years and what's already happening, basically. Things like the Samsung Ciro TV, that's the one that weirdly flips around so you can watch your TikTok videos in your living room. It's madness to me, but some people are loving it. So Deloitte have basically been saying that in 2030, they think almost all TVs will be 8K. They think basically 8K will be around $500, or £500 actually, so that'd be the default for most TVs. 2030 is a long way away. Like, that to me sounds like not that surprising. But the other thing they're talking about is that maybe, or they predict that they think you'll be able to get money off your TV by essentially giving permission for your viewing habits to go straight over the internet to straight to providers. So essentially, if you're watching a load of TV on HBO, for example, that would go straight to HBO and you would get a slightly cheaper TV for that. Would any of you guys do that to get $500 of a TV?
Well, I think, you know, this is a subscription, well, not subscription, it's like an advertising model that, like, Amazon's used before to try and get money off Fire tablets. But I mean, I don't think it's going to be a case of where people necessarily get money off. It's just that the price of stuff will be baked in as like a loss leader, in the sense of this will maybe become default, like a de facto thing to do, where certain people will opt into a scheme and then they'll get a cheaper cost of TV without really, you know, it becomes such a long-term thing that it won't really be a noticeable thing anymore. And I think, I know 2030 is 10 years off, but 8K is just coming now. I mean, if you think back to 2005, 2006, when full HD was just turning up, so, you know, 14 years later, when, you know, maybe 10 years later after that, where it was just everywhere, you know, there's still channels on TV that aren't HD. So it's not like it's completely through. So you can understand why it's at least 10 years before 8K is like the normal thing, if it ever does get there. Because to be honest, do we really need 8K? We might find it something else. But given the fact that the TVs can pump it out through the internet now, I think that's pretty easy to do.
We need rollable TVs. That's all we need, right?
We don't need them.
I need them. Yeah, I imagine how much space that would save.
Yeah, true.
The theory behind one of the things we posited in the article was that, you know, the TVs will become, you know, because rollable TVs could be really cheap if they were mass produced really easily and they could be inkjet printed and all that stuff. But the idea being that every 2 years you could just buy a new TV, like change your light bulb, because it would be so much more cost effective and you could roll it up, chuck it places, you know, take it on a plane, circling right back to that original point.
Oh, that would work on planes. You know, like if you're sat in one of the front rows and you've got to pull out that thing from the side of your chair, you could just have a rollable TV that way. That would make so much more sense.
Put your whole computer screen on the front thing so everyone can just see what you're doing. Like the opposite of privacy. Right, I feel like it's time for a break. We have gone on. Look at Bill turns up and we get an extra 7 minutes of content straight away. Love it.
Just imagine if I was prepared.
And we're back. Cherie, I know this is the best bit.
It is. It's my favorite part of the show. It's unpopular opinions. Let your hate unfurl. Give us all your hot takes, whether they're right or wrong. They're probably wrong, but that's why it's an unpopular opinion.
I like the fact that unpopular opinion sound is often far more, like, it's far more regular in the thing compared to Into the Labs, which is just a journey into the unknown every time.
Just like going into the labs. So, I mean, it fits.
I found myself singing unpopular opinions in the shower the other day. Like, I was like, what am I humming? Oh, wait, it's that.
I would love for some enterprising composer to come up with some theme music for these so I can stabilize them and just make up words and not melody. Challenge internet.
Sexy, what were you doing in the shower that made you feel like it was an unpopular opinion?
Oh god.
Yeah.
Just washing
this
in general, I think.
Yeah, my mom's not watching. Anyway, Bill, I know that we had to take you off your spicy take earlier in the session. The podcast is known as a session, apparently. But the new PS5 controller is not your favorite thing. Go.
Is it a spicy opinion? I mean, it looks like a giant like bulb of plastic.
Don't all controllers?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but they don't look like bulbs.
Okay. Why is it so ugly though? Like, I mean, I thought it looked quite spacey.
It looks like this, but with more bubbles.
A visual feature for the listeners here.
That was an Xbox One controller we just got shown.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it could be helped by making it less. I don't like the way. I'm fine with like having like a two-tone design, but like dividing it where they divided it. It just.
Can you explain what it looks like to the listener? Can you just explain briefly so they can get a visual feeling for it?
Okay, so imagine an Xbox One controller, but you move. The left thumbstick down to where the D-pad is, move the D-pad back up, and then like put a giant touchpad in the middle and then put lights on other side so it makes it look like way bigger than it needs to be. And then you make it look like the controller's wearing like spaghetti straps. You split the controller in half between the black and white.
I feel, even though I know what it looks like, I feel more confused.
Probably would have gone better if I had a picture of it open in front of me.
Bill's memory from 24 hours ago.
I think what people are really reacting to are the buttons. Like, they seem flush against the actual controller instead of like protruding a little bit, and they're white, so there's no way to differentiate like off the bat. So I think that's going to be a problem for some gamers initially. And it's a photograph. It might look way, way better in person than it does in that picture. And on top of that, we are a picky bunch and we love to complain. So it's like, it's new. I don't like it, but it's this new thing that we've been requesting for a couple of years now. When's the new console coming? When's the new console coming? Is it now, 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 now? Like, and now it's here. It's like, nah, I don't like it. Nah.
Okay, but like, that's another thing I hate though, is the buttons. Like, so the PS4 controller, like all the base buttons are like color coded, right? Why did they not do that? And then the PlayStation guide button, like, I know I like mentioned it earlier, but like for folks that have like, you know, not so great sight, it's gonna be hard for them to differentiate where the button ends and the controller begins.
Yeah, I saw someone make a render where the actual PlayStation button was the like the original logo, so the yellow and the yellow and red, and that looked really nice. Actually, I think that would have been a nicer touch.
Yeah, we don't look backwards, Pixie. We only look forwards.
I mean, like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So if enough people complain about this, I don't see a world where PlayStation doesn't give the fans what they want.
I quite like it personally. I'm not certain on the two-tone design, but to me that kind of, I feel like they're just going to end up bringing out a black one anyway. It feels like the kind of thing that there will just be another option, and this is just our first look, and they will bring out different colors and you'll get a choice of it. I may be entirely wrong. It may just be this default one to start with on day one when I'll be buying one, and I'll end up with it until they start making ridiculous orange color ones or whatever, and then I'll buy one of them.
But I mean, Bill, obviously this week you did find something that you love, which was Final Fantasy VII. And just briefly, given we are running way over time, what was so good about this game in your mind?
Everything.
Oh, that's it.
Like, I think it was literally the best way they could have redone that game. Like, added a whole bunch of new story content, fleshed out all the side characters, and made them, like I found myself sympathizing with characters that were only in the original game for, like, 10-15 minutes. It is so good. It is perfect.
I never played Final Fantasy, but I read your whole review, which was excellent, of course. I was doing things. I was about to say like I was outside playing football, but I wasn't. I can't pretend. No, but the Final Fantasy was never something I watched, but I read your whole review. Final Fantasy was never something I watched, like it was a film. But I read the whole review and I found it really interesting how much you loved it, given you clearly enjoyed the first version of the game, right? And I was thinking, like, if it was like one of my favorite films that someone went and took the first half hour and expanded that into a whole new film with new side characters and a new storyline and everything, I'd feel really angry that it ruined, like, what was there before, because unless they could have seamlessly sort of made it sound like every single part that happened later was still part of that original setting, then I felt like it would have ruined it. But you seem to be the exact opposite.
Well, like, generally speaking, I don't like appealing to, like, tradition or keeping things the way they are. I love it when people, like, take something I love and create something new out of it. I think it's just, like, a difference in mentality, I guess. The original Final Fantasy VII is always going to be there if I want to go and experience that again. But seeing them take the inspiration from that and create something that's so good and completely new out of it, yeah. I love that.
I tell you what, I suppose as you say that, I played GoldenEye on the Nintendo till it absolutely died on the N64 a long time ago, and then they brought it back out again on the PlayStation and recently remastered and stuff, and it was just like it was like halfway between the two, because it was sort of the same levels but expanded but not, and the guns were there and expanded but not, and it was just sort of like, well, I can't use my original capabilities of knowing all these levels inside out. That doesn't help. And I can't really enjoy this new game because it's a bit shit, to be honest with you. So it ruined what was there before by bringing it back again. So I suppose, yeah, the fact they completely reimagined it, like you said, and added so much more. And you said the combat system was completely different and all this kind of stuff is, if you got to do it, you've got to do it hard. And it sounds like that's what they did.
Yeah, it definitely is what they did.
Bill, correct me if I'm wrong. You awarded this five out of five stars?
Yes, I did.
I am so excited to play, like, Final Fantasy VII. Like, I have played other Final Fantasies before, but this was the one that really set for me, like, yes, JRPGs, this is the thing for me. It's going to be, like, this is a lifelong journey with me and the JRPG, and I am really, really excited to start playing this week. I am excited about the graphics. I'm excited about the story. I'm a little bummed out that they only gave us, basically, it sounds like they only gave us disc one and two.
It's like the first 15% of the game.
So that's not even disc, that we're still on disc one, basically.
Yes.
The game ends when you leave Midgar.
Oh. I want all of it. I want it now.
Wait until 2022.
I'm scared for that because it took them so long to get this together. I'm like, how long am I going to have to wait to, like, so that means basically I don't get any Yuffie. I don't get to fight any of the weapons. I don't get to breed chocobos. Like, there's I don't even get the Red X yet. And Vincent and all these characters. Do you get the Nibelheim? Do you even get that? No, you don't. You don't get the Nibelheim. You just left Midgar. So there's like a big old, there's like hours and hours of content left that we don't even get to explore. Like, I love the idea of going into a deeper dive and really exploring what Avalanche is talking about and all those game points, but I just want all of it now. Like, don't serve it out to me like a dealer. Like, give me my stuff. Like, you're going to get your money. Don't do this to me.
Well, so like, if this iteration of the remake is any indication, by the time they're done remaking the entire game, it's probably going to be something like 400 hours. Or just the required story.
Oh my god, that makes me so happy.
And you'll probably be replaying the first version of it by the time the next one comes out, because you're going to be getting ready for that. So yeah, you're going to be spending 500 hours at least.
I'm going back to the first part of it this weekend. So like,
well, Sheree, we'll get your hot takes on that next week to see if you agree with Bill, or you're just like, yeah, he's completely wrong, but Bill's not on the podcast next week, so he can't defend himself. But Bill, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you here.
Yeah,
have
you
enjoyed your
me.
Lack of preparation?
I mean, it kept me on my toes.
Yeah, just to be clear, not Bill's fault, absolutely ours. I made it sound like he didn't care. The running order wasn't shared with him because, you know, why make it easy? But thank you very much, Bill. Do you want to give us any information about your Twitter handles, because Sheree's going to go on for a good 10 minutes about ways to talk to her?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jackie Cobra. You can also follow me on pretty much everything with the exact same name, Jackie Cobra.
Bexy, thank you for joining us as well.
No problem. Thank you for having me again. I'm at James RWP on Twitter. Now time for 10 Minutes of Cherie.
Yes, I am Cherielle Smith, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, all those things under Miss Smith 11, M-I-S-S Smith. And of course, go to Laptop Mag and read our reviews, our news, our face-offs, our hot takes, our op-eds, the whole kit-banging-shaboodle.
Kit-banging-shaboodle, the new phrase. And I'm Gareth. obviously, if you want more things about more things, Tech Radar is your place to come. We do so much, I can't even bother to cover it all right now, but you will find something wonderful to listen to or to read, because now we have both of those things on the website. This has been the Noise Cancelling Podcast. If you do like it, please find us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I mean, let's be honest, you're listening to the podcast now. You've probably got a podcast platform. Just press the subscribe button. That would be lovely. And I have to tell you, of course, that we're part of the Audio Boom Originals Network, which means there's lots of really great podcasts you should listen to, so do check them out. And it's just for me to say thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much, Pexy.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye.
Thanks, Cherie.
Bye.
And bye from me. Bye-bye now.